confused one.
So,
progressive.
At, I don't know. I had 5 different choices for this chabura, which I think is like too hard. It's like so much easier in like Vayikra, where you're just like, oh my God, there's a topic to talk about. I'm done. Like, why keep looking? That all week long, I kind of went back and forth, which leads to a lot of anxiety on Wednesday night when there's no makoros, no topic, and no notes. So I went to bed last night very early, assuming that like I'd get up at the crack of dawn. Well before the crack of dawn this morning, since the crack of dawn is like, you know, 7:20. Minion. But I figured, no problem. Set my alarm for 4. I have an hour and a half to do chabura, and I'll still make it to the 5:55 minion on time. So one of my kids woke up at 11:45 last night and kept me up till 1. Ozzy. And then I was like, not Ozzy. It's like, all right, well, whatever. But at 12:30 at night, I was like, well, I'm not getting out of bed. And I already read that the Nationals won the World Series, and that was heartbreaking.
The Expos.
I could have dealt with that a lot more than the Nationals. So I... whatever. I found a great article by Rabbi Alex Israel. So I want to share that with you... tonight. So then, of course, my biggest, like, my anxiety kicked in at 5:30 this morning when I woke up. I was like, shoot, maybe we did this before. But I checked and I'm fairly certain we did not. So I want to take a look at Nimrod tonight and try to get a better sense of who he was and exactly what drove him to all the things that he did. And perhaps to better understand some of the midrashim about who he was. So let's start from Perek Yud Pasuk Aleph. After the flood, we know that the world was repopulated, and it was repopulated through Noach's 3 children, Shem, Ham, and Yafet. So we're told, Ve'ela told us, B'nei Noach, Shem, Ham, and Yafet. We're going to come back to those words, Eila told us, next week, because I already have the topic for next week 100% done. But the Eila told us, when we have it in Bereshis, it indicates a start of a new sequence. So I'm going to assume that everybody's going to remember that in a week from now. But the Eila told us, it's something new. Well, the newness here is clearly the newness of the world, meaning the world had ceased to exist as everybody had known it, and now it's starting again. And who is it? It's Noach's kids, Shem, Ham, and Yafet, that will repopulate the world. Vayivaldu lahem banim achar ha-mabul, and they have kids after the mabul. Bnei Yafet, Gomer, Magog, Madai, ve'yavan, ve'tuval, u'meshech, ve'tiras, u'bnei Gomer, Ashkenaz, ve'rifat, ve'togarma. So those are the kids of Yafet. U'bnei Yavan, Elisha, ve'tarshish, kitim, ve'dodanim. All right, maybe some of these are you know, the nations that we know. Maybe Ashkenaz is really, you know, Europe and it's Germany. Who knows? And then we're told, Me'ela nifridu iye hagoyim ve'artzotam ish lil shono l'mishpechotam begoyehem. And from there, they all spread out, each man to his language, and every family to their nations, which would kind of indicate that really what these psukim are doing is, it's giving us the far-reaching story past the Dor Haflaga and past the Migdal Bavel, because Ish Lil Sho No means each one has his own language. Uvenei Cham, Kush, Mitzrayim, Ufutu, Knan, Uvenei Chush, Sva, V'chavil, V'safta, Ram, V'safta, Chav, Uvenei Ram, Sheva, Udedan. And these are the kids of Cham. The Kush, Yalad et Nimrod, and Kush gave birth, not gave birth, begot, I think is what art school says, Nimrod, who we know, and who a chelio, gibor ba'aretz, he began to be a gibor ba'aretz, a strong man on the planet. What I think is really critical when we read Chet to Yud Aleph is that we need to make an evaluation of Nimrod just based on the psukim, which is really hard, because if I were to ask at this point in time what we think of Nimrod, what would we say?
Who is
he? But I'm saying, like, let's pretend that we're not looking at the psukim, and let's like go into like the deep resources of like knowledge that we know. So what would we say about Nimrod? Josh has no idea. Anybody else? What do we know? Based on...
he rebelled against God.
Can I phone a friend?
Yeah, I mean, like, we know he rebelled against God. He's a bad person. He does all kinds of terrible things. And that's fine. But I do believe that we have to look at the psukim carefully and take a careful read of what's going on in the psukim. So from Pasuk Chet, all we know is hu heichel, which is a weird word, Leo gibor ba'aretz. So he somethinged, let's use the word at least for now, he began to be a gibor ba'aretz, a strong man on the earth. Hu haya gibor tzayid lifnei Hashem. Al ken yamer kinimrod gibor tzayid lifnei Hashem. He was a gibor tzayid before God. And therefore, people said, it was an expression, I don't remember which of the Mefarshim I saw this in, it was the Ibn Ezra. He said, and maybe Rabbeinu Bachaye, says that this expression was like still part of like the common like language in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. So in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, when the Torah was written, if you want to talk about somebody that was really strong, you would be like, oh yeah, he's like a gibor tzayid lifnei Hashem, like Nimrod. Can Nimrod? Okay, so I'm not sure if that's the only tzayad in Tanakh, but yes, it is true. We connect him to Esav. Esav was a hunter. He was a hunter. How else are Esav and Nimrod connected?
The clothing.
Yeah.
The tzayad also would say about Esav. It's a hunting. Capturing with words. Maybe just Nimrod was a very
eloquent speaker.
Eloquent person that captivated people to become leader based on words, not necessarily physical strength.
Okay. So
very powerful words, I guess.
He's powerful, right, but when Ra
with words.
Right, but that's an important, like, it's not just that he was charismatic and dynamic and rallies the truth, but you use the word Mordechai ensnare, right? Like, so he somehow, it does not sound like it's a good thing, right? So what does it mean to be a gibor tzayid lifnei Hashem? A strong hunter before God. And that's why people said, like Nimrod, a strong hunter before God.
Repetition, it's eight more words in the Torah, but those seem like necessary for us all.
Every once in a while, David, for whatever reason, the Torah gives us like these phrases. And it's like, oh, and you know, like, either like the Ad HaYom HaZeh stuff, like who cares? Because it's not really Ad HaYom HaZeh. Well, whatever. We had that conversation a long time ago. But like, what does it mean? Like, do we really need to know that 1,000 years later or 2,000 years later or 3,000 years later, it was still the same city? Like, who cares? It doesn't make a difference to us. And certainly from the perspective, we're reading it like almost 3,500 years later. Like, really, does it matter? But also this, like, what do we need to know that in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, like, this was, like, popular, like, it was, like, a popular, like, language to use?
Yeah, that's what I said. Are you answering?
No, I'm saying, like, why? I'm saying, because the Torah does it every once in a while. I think it's, like, a question, you'd have to ask the question across the board, why the Chumash does that a bunch of times.
Okay.
So, he's a gibor tzayid lifnei Hashem. What in the world does that mean? And Vatihi Reishit Mamlachto Bavel, the beginning of his melucha, right, the seat of his power was Bavel, the Erech, the Akkad. Erech is another place. Akkad. Anybody know what Akkad is? So there's one of the old biblical, the Torah, and a lot of the words in it come from the Akkadic words. That's this. Akkad, that's that area. So he was the king in this region of Shinar, which was like in the Fertile Crescent. And then we're told, and from the land came out Ashur. And Ashur, apparently, after he left, he built Nineveh, Rehovot Ir, and Kalach. It's also like a really weird pasuk. Why is Ashur leaving? So the Ibn Ezra says, Ashur is Ben Yefet. He's from Yefet. V'zeh yachar aflaga. And this was after Migdal Bavel. V'melech shem malach Bavel. But tchila ya Nimrod. And originally the king of Bavel was Nimrod. And Ashur decides to leave after Dor HaFlaga. If you're trying to figure out who Ashur is, he just wants you to know that Ibn Ezra says it was one of the sons or descendants of Yefet. Right, okay, yeah. And that Resen ben Ninveh ben Kalach he ha'ira gdola, and Resen was between Ninveh and Kalach, and it was the big city. Umitzrayim, a lot of ludim, betanamim, betlavim, betnaftuchim, betpatrusim, betkasluchim, asher yatsu misham plishtim, betkaftorim. And Mitzrayim had all these kids that would then lead to the children of the plishtim and the kaftorim. I only really have one question tonight, and that is, I know it's out of character. Last week I had like 9, this week 1, so it averages out to my like typical 4-ish, but what kind of person is Nimrod? So based on these 4 psukim, who wants to make a guess, based on the text, what kind of person Nimrod was? He's a leader, he's a developer, a builder, okay? A conqueror. Okay, is he a good person or a bad person? What?
He's strong.
What?
He's describing his talents, not his intentions.
Okay, so but the question is, what do we do with the words Lifnei Hashem? Meaning, if you want to say that he... If you want to say that he's a gibor, or a gibor ba'aretz, or a gibor tzayid, that's fine. But what is the place of Lifnei Hashem there?
He's a God-fearing guy. There's 2 kinds of strong tzayid out there, right? You've got the God-fearing ones, those that have no passion.
So he was God-fearing.
What could you say? Like, he recognized it was a higher being. He recognized there was something else going on that was running the world.
Okay, so Bechavo, you know, Kenegdo, is it with him or against him? Is Lifnei Hashem meaning in his face fighting Hashem, or Lifnei meaning I'm representing and being an advocate for Hashem?
That's a good question. I don't know, so which one?
It's unclear, it's ambiguous.
Okay, so Josh definitively says...
I wasn't definitively right.
Okay, I stand corrected.
I'm hedging.
Josh seemed to definitively say that... He is a believer in God. Okay. Mordechai says, I don't know. Like, it's very unclear. You can go either way. You can say he's before God or against God. So which one is it? So the Medrash... Yeah, it says the words Lifnei Hashem by Pinchas.
My phone is charging over there. I can't safari that, but
yeah, I don't know. So it's a good question. So the Medrash makes no secret about their feeling, and they say, well, I'll tell you what Nimrod is. First off, which is like a very fun midrashic tool. Is let's look at his name. What's the shoresh of Nimrod? Right, what does that mean?
Rebel.
Right, so the Medrash says he rebels. Well, if you're going to rebel, who's he rebelling against?
Or what is he rebelling?
Well, there's only... He rules the entire world. So clearly, he is not rebelling against the people because the people are his subjects. Who's he rebelling against? He's rebelling against the only entity that is... You know, an equal, so to speak, to him, and that's God. So that's wonderful.
Unless he became the leader by rebelling.
Right. I mean, he rallied the people around him to
rebelled against
the bad people.
So I would doubt that because it says Hu Echelio Gibor Ba'aretz. He was the first one of these. It seems like there was what?
Does that mean he was the first, or that he was starting to become?
I think the concept is probably more along the line. He's an innovator. Before there were strong people, but there were not strong people that had the power and the people in their hands. So it would seem as though He's the first to do this.
Plus, they're all independent family states, and he's the first one to unite them all. So he's rebelling against the concept of this family independence.
So you're saying that you're... Sorelli's coming up with...
Hello, Gary.
Sorelli's coming up with his own midrashic interpretation of his name. He's a rebel, but he's not a rebel against God. He's a rebel against...
the way it was doing, right. The way the world was functioning.
He's an innovator.
Right. What do we say? We would say he's a disruptor now, right? Yeah. He disrupts the norms of society. And nowadays, it's a great thing, right? Those are the people that, like, are most successful. Okay. So the question really is like this. We know what the Medrash says. We've been taught this since we're children, like little children, because Nimrod is going to be the central figure that stands up against who? Against Avram, which is fascinating because that story has zero place in the Chumash. I always love when a kid is like, that's in the Psukim. And you're like, honey, I'm sorry. It's really not. No, it really is. And I'm like, really, like, it's so... Sometimes, I had this conversation with a teacher yesterday where we were talking about, like, what do you do when you teach a Rashi to, I don't know, fifth grade, sixth grade? So I said, like, you know, I loved her lesson because what she did was, the Rashi was clearly not pshat, but what she wanted the kids to do is say, what word in the pasuk kind of like motivated Rashi to leave like the pshat? I said, it's awesome. Like, that's what you want the kids to do. So like the allusion to Avram and Nimrod is the word Ur Kastiv, the fire of Kastiv. You're hanging your hat on a lot when the place could just be Ur Kastiv, like just the name. But Nimrod is going to be on the one hand and Avram on the other hand. And there's no question that the Medrash makes Nimrod out to be a rebel against God and all that. Question is, how does Pshat stack up against the Medrash? That's what I want to try to do tonight. So, take a look at the bottom of the page. We're going to take a look at Rashi first. We're going to circle back to the psukim that we skipped in a little bit. But Leo Gibor, we're going to start with Rashi. Lahamrid kol ha'olam alav kadosh baruch hu ba'atzas dor haflaga. He was a gibor. What does that mean, he was a gibor? He wanted to make the entire world rebel against God in his advice by dor haflaga. What was his advice by dor haflaga? Build the tower.
That's a big stretch, though. They're getting that from the word gibor.
Yeah, that is true. So then he says, gibor tzayin. Keyboard Sayyid. Sad datan shel briope fiv. Umatan limrobe makom. He hunted people, ensnared, like Mordechai said, the people with his mouth. So he's more than just a charismatic and a dynamic speaker, but he's a speaker that's able to rally the masses by tricking them. And what does he do? He gets him again to rebel against God. Lifnei Hashem, mitkavein laknito al panav. He went up against God. Al kein yamer, and therefore they say, al kol adam marshia ba'azis panim, yodeya ribono mitkavein limrod bo. Therefore they would say, anybody that knew God and decided to willfully rebel against him with such azuspanim, with such brazenness, yeyamer, they would say about that guy, oh, kenimrod gibor tzayit. So we saved that expression for who? People that were like real.
Manipulators.
More than manipulators, like a paro type. Somebody that knows God and willfully ignores him. That is what you would use that expression for. And min ha'aretz, says Rashi, came in Shura Ashur banav shomim lenimrod mordim b'makom levnot ha'migdal yatzah mitocham. When Ashur saw his children listening to Nimrod, he's like, I'm out of here. and he goes to Nineveh. And just because the Medrash can do this, the Medrash then said, this is partially why we say, why is it that Nineveh, when Yonah goes to Nineveh, why is it that they recognize God?
I thought it was Paro that was there.
What, another possibility is because their forefather was more God-fearing. And therefore instilled in the DNA of the people is fear of God.
What is this concept of God in the following here?
The God is
What is their concept of God?
God is the Borei Olam.
Well, that's what we believe. Is that what they believe?
Well, there was a time. Right, there was a time, and there were some people that believed that. But it seems like at a certain point in time, the world stopped doing that.
The same behaviors were around. Publicizing.
Yeah. So hold on to that. I hope you come back next week.
Spoiler alert.
I know you enjoy Bereshit. Yes. So, but that's I don't know. I mean, besides that, it would go off. On a tangent for a bit, it's a part, not a big, but a small part of next week. So Rashi builds a case that Nimrod is a bad guy, wicked to the core, and it seems actually that Rashi follows what you would say it's Rashi Lishita, so where you see the same thing by Esav. It's so many of the same similarities. Tzad Datan Shel Aviv. He was able to ensnare his dad. The clothing, the notion that he was able to rebel and all those things, just sad. And the fact that he's a tzayad, he's a hunter. It just all seems very similar. That's Rashi. Turn to the next page for a sec. Now let's take a look at the Ibn Ezra. I can only... Oh, sorry. To the left side. All right. This is really fascinating because the Ibn Ezra likes to go on a limb a lot. And it's great to watch. Anybody ever... I don't know if I mentioned this, but the Hakdama to the Ramban, where he talks about the difference between Rashi and between the Ibn Ezra... is like unbelievable. He talks, it's like a poem that he writes as his akdama, and he talks about how Rashi is like the one, the amazing, everything is wonderful, and Rashi is like, you know, Morenu v'Rabbeinu, Avinu, all that. And then he says, the Ibn Ezra, I fight you in this world, but we'll be friends in the next world. It's pretty much what it is. You gotta read it. It's awesome. But that's why... The Ramban will very rarely like argue with Rashi in an obnoxious way. He'll usually say, Rabbeinu says, but I don't agree. Ibn Ezra, he'll be like, we should shove molten gold down his throat and shut him up. So like, that's what he says. I was like reading an Ibn Ezra on Sukkis, and I was like, holy cow. It's like, how did the Ramban write that? It's like, you know, nowadays, if the rabbi said something like that, we would be like so taken aback. And that's what the Ramban writes. But the Ibn Ezra, l'shitaso, everything he's going to say tonight is going to be consistent in all three times that we're going to take a look at the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says Nimrod. So listen to what he says as his first one. And I want you to try to figure out why does he say this. Ibn Ezra says, Al tivakesh tam l'chol ha-shemot im lo nichtav. The Ibn Ezra says, I want you to know a very important rule. I don't care what a person's name is unless the Torah cares what the person's name is. And how do you know when the Torah cares about a person's name?
Because it says it.
Yeah, like give me an example.
Nimrod.
No.
Yishmael.
Yishmael, right? Why? No, that's his description.
Right?
It's a hard one. Yeah. But all the Shvatim. Avraham. Avraham on Goyim. Yitzchak, right? Why? Because you laughed. All those things. So the Ibn Ezra says, I'm going to teach you my rule. I only care about a person's name as a significant piece if the Torah says it. What do you think the Ibn Ezra is addressing here?
I don't care about Nimrod. doesn't explain it.
But why does he have to say this?
Because Rashi just explained what it was.
He's showing, don't make him out to be a rebellious person just because that's right. The shortest of his name.
I knew what he was going to say.
Right. So he's attacking...
Rashi.
Perhaps. He's attacking the... Broader than Rashi, he's attacking the concept of the Medrash. Meaning what Ibn Ezra is saying is, like, don't hang your hat on the fact that this person's name is that. Maybe they just like that name. So, v'hu heichel. What does he say, v'hu heichel? Now, remember, what did Rashi say who heichel was? Do we see that in Rashi?
No.
Not sure. Okay. It says, Laharot gvuros b'nei adam alachayos ki ayagi bortzai. He wanted to show man's strength over animals.
Okay.
What does that sound like?
Praise.
He's a hunter. And what did he teach other people how to do? Yeah, is that a bad thing?
Nope.
Well, it's post-flood. What are they now allowed to do?
Eat meat.
Yeah, so what he does is he basically says, you don't only have to eat cow. Because cow is probably not terribly difficult to catch. But a hunter, what does he hunt? Nobody says, I went out there with my shotgun and I went out into the fields and I caught myself a cow. Right? You don't need to do that. What do you catch for yourself? Right, something that there has to be like a sport to it. So, v'tam lifnei Hashem... Shayabon, this is wild. Lifnei Hashem says the Ibn Ezra Shayabonem is bechot. He built not one mizbeach, but multiple ones. Umalo tamachayot olot lashem. He brought korbanos to Hashem. And that, if it wasn't enough. If it wasn't enough, his first comment, I didn't really need the first comment. I put it in there just because I thought it was a good line, right? But when you look at Ibn Ezra's closing statement here, he means to say, Rashi, you're wrong. V'zo derech ha-pshat. So this is in fact pshat.
Yeah.
Wait. But it gets even better. His last three words are even better. V'ha drash derech acheres. He says in the Medrash, the Drash, the whatever you are, the Limud that you have, Rashi and others, Derech Acheres.
What's his source material for his explanation?
Pshat.
So that's the question.
I'm just saying.
The question is, where does he get it from? So I don't think so. I actually don't know. I've had several conversations with Rabbi Kelemer about Tanakh, and then sometimes I'm like, I'm so excited because I have this great question, and Rabbi Kelemer is not, and it's a real letdown. I'm a whole theory here, and he's like, I don't think so. But I once asked him a question about the Ibn Ezra, and he said that the Ibn Ezra was like a maverick, meaning in the sense that he is not. There isn't necessarily a Masorah to what he says, and that's I think why the Ramban gets so ticked off at him. The Ramban is like, where do you come from? And where are you getting this whole thing from? What you're saying is so against the grain that it almost seems like you're saying it just to be oppositional.
Shock job.
So, and then Al-Kain Yamer, Mishel, Mashal Haya Gam Yimei Moshe. So it was the Ibn Ezra. He says, I don't know. In the times of Moshe, they still use this phrase. How in the world did Rashi and Ibn Ezra emerge so differently? Rashi builds a picture that we're comfortable and familiar with. That what? Nimrod was evil. And then Ibn Ezra comes along and says, not so fast. So the question is, who reads better in the Pesukim? So I don't know. He's a Gibor. Okay. So what? Is it bad to be a Gibor Ba'aretz? I don't know. He was a Gibor Tzayid before God. Ibn Ezra
sounds like a good thing.
Right. Ibn Ezra says, like, to be lifnei Hashem is not a bad thing.
Well, if tzayit has negative connotation itself, then it's you being that even in front of Hashem, so then it's worse.
Right, so.
I hear
Lifnei Hashem doesn't sound like a bad thing. Meaning, like, if you walked into the cemetery and you saw that somebody had on their matseva just the two words Lifnei Hashem, what would we think?
You start with the assumption it's not going to be something bad.
Right, you would assume he wasn't a rebellious person against God. Because if he was, then why would it say Lifnei Hashem? Lifnei Hashem sounds like you're in the presence of God. So, Rabbi Alex Israel does feel that the Ibn Ezra is probably a better read. So his question then becomes, I get Ibn Ezra. Why Rashi?
Let me answer a different question.
Yeah?
Rashi's making it really bad. How many really bad characters were there that were so vague in the Pesukim?
Esav.
Esav was so, first of all, we had to think that Esav was so bad.
No, but that's my point is that I could look at a lot of people like Esav.
This is like a Rasha. Would Esav be a Rasha?
According to Rashi?
No, forget Rashi.
No, but according... But according to these psukim, there's no indication. Rashi is the one that makes him out to be bad.
I know, that's what I'm saying. But for really, really bad people, it's in the psukim. Like Bilam.
Client? No. I can make a case that Bilam's a good guy. I can make a case that Esav's a good guy. Now with the help of the Ibn Ezra, I can make a case that Nimrod is a good guy.
I agree with Nimrod being a good guy.
I'm going to get myself...
Can you make a case that Esav is a good guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that.
Yeah, we did it last year.
We did that before.
Yeah, we did it before. It's like, right, it's like part of the chorus. Like, the crazy thing is that as bad as everyone makes Esav out, I think five different times with five different sources and five different angles.
And even Lavan.
I've said, he's not a bad guy. Well, Lavan, I don't know.
Right.
The one guy that I've tried so hard in my mind, because I'm like so torn on him, is like Achav is wicked, like textually. And it bothers me because, like, I don't know, I took an affinity to him. Like, there's something about Achav that, like, speaks to me more than most of the characters in Sefer Melachim. I don't think he's as bad as we make him out to be. But okay, fine. I'm not so much a, I don't have as much of a backing on that. So Menashe is the psukim, at least that's complicated. The complicated part is that Menashe projects very badly in Melachim, but not in Divrei Hayamim. Meaning Divrei Hayamim cleans him up, which is again beyond the scope of tonight. But the problem is that, like, yes, there are some people. You want a guy that I can't clean up, and I have no interest in cleaning up, like Haman.
Paro. Yeah, that's right. Soon, so
I'm saying Paro. Yeah, I have a hard time with that. I have a hard time like cleaning Paro up. These are people that are wicked, but at least I could tell you, like, textually, I could prove it. Mm-hmm. How do you prove this?
I agree.
So what's Rashi? Why is Rashi motivated to leave Derech HaPshat? That's our question. Which,
and it seems like every single person that we listed who was questionable, Rashi's on the negative side. And then we had to go stretching to find the other side. That's just Rashi. That's where Rashi is. You have to contrast them to the good guys in the book, which are the Avos and the Shvatim. So anybody who's not one of them is bad.
Rashi's article.
Yeah.
I'm gonna share something that's off topic. It was actually supposed to be the Chabura tonight, but... If it's going to be a chabura, it's 5 years from now. So hopefully by then, it'll be forgotten.
Yes,
but I think it speaks loudly. It speaks loudly to Medrash. Perhaps the most difficult person, certainly in the Parsha, but maybe in all of Chumash, to reconcile with the Medrash would be Noach. Okay, I really find it hard to beat up on Noach. He's a pretty good guy, and yet, what do all the midrashim do? Noach was self-centered. Noach only cared about himself. Noach didn't daven for all the people. Noach wasn't Moshe. Noach wasn't Yonah. Noach wasn't this guy. Noach wasn't that guy. Over and over and over and over again. Humanity. Millions of people are killed. One person is chosen. Why can't you make him out to be a good guy? This is wild. So where is the beginning of Noach being a bad guy? Where do we see that for the first time?
After.
It's not in the Psukim. In the Psukim, the only thing we have is that he got drunk at the end. Mm-hmm. And I could find, and most people can find, a very good reason for that. He came out of the Teva, he spent a long time taking care of everyone, and he comes out and the entire world, remember, he knew what the world looked like beforehand, the entire world is destroyed. That wouldn't drive you to drink? It's not crazy. Right? Where is the first time that Noach gets really like beat up on?
When he doesn't go in.
In the Medrash. The Medrash is the source of that. So why? Why does the Medrash have to do that? So this is a fascinating historical footnote. So Christianity came along at what period in the Jewish history? The times of the Mishnah, right? By it Cheney, the end, the right. Jesus was perhaps a Talmud of Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, which puts him towards like the middle of maybe the middle to the end of the Tanayim. When Christianity was emerging, Rabbi Alex Israel says, quote somebody else, he says they were looking for a person to be their role model. I want somebody who's a good guy, but also like he's like a little bit of a minimalist. He doesn't do that much, but he's a good person. They had to pick one person. Who do they pick? They pick Noach. The Balei Medrash really had to do something because they needed to prevent like the mainstream Judaism said, well, if Noach is like the paragon of virtue to Christianity, and we hold that Noach is a good guy, then why the heck do I need Judaism? It's so much more burdensome than Christianity.
So Noach isn't necessarily a bad guy, they just had to make
it. Is that crazy?
No,
it's
not crazy.
The Medrash comes along, and what do they do? Every rabbi that had to give a drasha in the times of the birth of Christianity beat up on Noah.
How does he get that the Christians beat up on Noah as their...
Meaning historically he says, I don't know, he's much smarter than I am. Not that he's not in their scriptures, but before they had scriptures, they needed somebody. Like, we look and say, who's our Rebbe?
Moshe.
So
you're saying the Medrash is no...
And by the way, Henry, no... What?
He's making that up.
Alex Israel?
Yeah.
Why do you say that? No, he has a source to it. He quotes it. I don't remember. It's like it's tucked away in a different Sefer.
Yeah. Paradigm of whatever.
He says that was what they felt was a good role model. So all the rabbis then subsequently had to watch out. What did they have to do? They had to discuss.
Not that I'm a scholar on Christianity, but...
Remind me afterwards. I have it. I WhatsApped this article already to somebody else. I'll just click it and send it to you afterwards. No, if enough people have it, then I have to take it off my list of 5 years down the road.
So the Medrash is no different than today's rabbinic propaganda.
No, I would not say rabbinic propaganda. Meaning the whole purpose of drash, when the rabbi gets up to give a speech, is what he's trying to do. Rabbi Sachs says this beautifully. He says that the Medrash's point is to take these psukim that have no relevance to 2019, and what the rabbis do is they figure out a way to give it a message that's relevant today.
So
what does the rabbi nowadays do for that? Rabbi Galler tells a joke or a story. Somebody else, you know, has a different style. But what they're doing is they're essentially weaving their lives, our lives, to be connected with the psukim. Medrash did the same thing. Some midrashim are made up in an attempt to make the Torah relevant to the population of their times. And that, says Rabbi Alex Israel, was why they beat up on Noah.
Yeah,
but the problem is, it's just a punchline. It's like, it's not a...
It's a good one, though.
Well, if I have to speak between Min Chamariv, it's like a great 10-minute vart. A whole sheer, it's like everywhere, I heard this, I heard this, I heard this, I heard this. Fine, it's like a zinger at the end. All right, whatever.
So if you ask anyone what the Chavur was about tonight, I think we're all coming with that message.
That's fine. It's
that's our moment.
Rabbi Alex Israel 2.0, we did two of him. But okay, on that, we're going to for sure not finish by 9:45. I apologize. Now let's go back to our shiur. Where does Rashi come from? Where is Rashi's motivation to ignore what Ibn Ezra says and ignore what seems like pshat, to go and on a limb and say something different? So Rabbi Alex Israel says perhaps there's two parts to it. The first one is the word gibor tzayid is very tough. A gibor, a strong man, which probably doesn't come off sounding right, but the idea of being powerful, being a leader, doesn't necessarily connect with a tzayad, with a hunter. A hunter is usually more, maybe they hunt in a pack, but it's not usually like the king, we don't view as a hunter.
It could be.
He could be, but less likely.
He
might have been, and that's what gives him his might. But the fact that his claim to fame is that Nimrod was a Gibor Tzayid, it seems like that was ongoing. Rashi doesn't seem comfortable with the fact that that has anything to do with his rulership, unless that's kind of like pointing us in the direction of he's not a conventional hunter, but rather he's a hunter with his words. That's his first point. His second point, though, is if you look, I did bold this just because I'm tired of like us going back and forth between the psukim.
Nimrod was a bad guy because he was a hunter with his words? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Rashi's notion?
I mean, that's right.
Isn't that what Abraham did?
Well, it depends. Meaning,
he did it for the
I, if I, right. I can.
Where's the connection to the bad part of. Where's the bad part?
The tzayad part. Abraham is a. Avram would not be.
I'm not comparing him to Avram, really. But hunting with words, why is it bad?
If you're manipulating people and using your words to steer them in the wrong direction.
How do you know it's the wrong direction?
Because what does a hunter do? A hunter is not a nice guy that says, come, you know what? I'm gonna go out and like I'm gonna like become. I'm gonna become friends with the deer and like. After, like, whatever, like, then he'll say to me, you know what, fine, I give up, and he'll let me, you know, kill him. What does he do? He sets traps. The very word, well, we don't, nobody uses that word in a positive note. Right? That, I would think that. But he also, if you're not, nobody, yeah. But the other one, which maybe is a much stronger one, is look at me. Textual connections there are between the top and the bottom. So it's there a 9:40. I'm not going to go through the story. We all know the story, right? Migdal Bavel.
Yep.
There's a guy that says, let's build a tower. Look at the connections that we have. First off, where is Nimrod king?
Bavel.
And where, what land is that in?
Shinar.
Take a look at Pasuk Bet, the Eretz Shinar, and take a look at Pasuk Tet, Al Kain Karashma. Bavel. Okay, we got that. Nivne lanu ir, let's build a city. Pasuk Yud Aleph, vayiven et Nineveh. He built Nineveh, perhaps. If you read the Pasuk a little bit differently, it's not Asher leaving, but rather that's a continuation of the Pasuk before. The last one is Heichel. Heichel, Hachilam, it's the same Shoresh. Put that on the back burner for just a second. I have another question for tonight. Which is like really the same question as the first one. Nimrod good, Nimrod bad. Is Migdal Bavel good or bad? What does Bavel mean? So it's very rare that I put English on the sources. But Bavel comes from the Sumerian phrase Bav Elim, the gate of God. I had no idea about that until I read that this week. That Bavel... Right, like we know the word.
Wait,
right?
But according to Barbanel, if he gives a reason afterwards, that's the reason.
According to the Ibn Ezra.
According to the Ibn Ezra. So that's the answer. Kishambal al Hashem.
That is true. So, Bavel, right? What? How? Where do we know that? Because what Masechta do we learn? Baba Kama, Baba Mitzia, Baba Basa. What is a Baba? It's a gate. Bava El. It's the gate of God. That is what that's what Bavel could mean. And yet, what do the Psukim say Bavel is? No way! Kisham Balal Hashem Sakalaretz. It's from the fact that God mixes up and confuses the language of the land.
Well, that's the whole point of the whole pasuk, is that they wanted to create a gate to God so they could get into his palace, and Hashem...
Excellent. So one possibility is that it's the irony of the psukim.
Iron gate.
Right? On the one hand, they, for what purpose they were making a gate to God is a good question, but they had this notion, and God says, yeah, you wanted that Bavel, I'll give you a different Bavel. I believe that the key to understanding this whole thing is the word Heichel. What does Heichel mean? So take a look at the left side, and let's take a look at Perek Dalet Pasach Chavav. Ulsheit Gam Hu Yulad Bein, by Kratchmo Enosh. Sheit has a son, and he calls him Enosh. Azuchal Likro B'Shem Hashem. And then they began to call out in the name of God. Hu Chal. Hu Chal Heichel. Hachilam. So what does Rashi say Huchal is? As Huchal, Lashon Chulin. Profanity. Lack of holiness. L'kro et shmot ha'adam et shmot ha'atzabim et shmot shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They start naming people and other things after God. La'asotan le'elilin v'l'krotan elohut. To make them into gods. According to Rashi, in the times of Enosh, Azuchal Kro B'Shem Hashem, means that what did they introduce into the world?
Idolatry.
The Rambam in Hilchos Avodas Kochavim, his first halacha there, we're not going to do it because it's late, but basically he says in the days of Enosh, that was their mistake. But they didn't mean it that way. When they said this tree, this star, this animal is a god, they didn't mean it that there's a pantheon of gods like Egypt. But what they meant was that what? I don't know who God is. I can't see God, I can't feel God, I can't touch God, and that makes it really hard. So what did they do? Yeah. They said these things will be like a physical manifestation of God. Star, powerful God, done. And then eventually it spiraled out and became full out Avodah Zarah. You can probably guess that what does the Ibn Ezra say Heichel means?
Again.
It's not going to be negative. Listen to what the Ibn Ezra says after the Rambam. Hu migizra tchila. Heichel means to begin. V'atam. What does it mean? Sheheichilu lehitpalel. In the times of Enosh, you know what they started to do? They began to pray. They were the first ones to pray. Comes along the Ibn Ezra and flips it on its head again. He says, you think Azuchal Kro B'Shem Hashem was bad? No, the opposite.
It's good.
Amazing. They were damning to God.
It works.
You do have to sit there and wonder, like, why is the Ibn Ezra so...
Why would the Midrash be bashing Enosh? Well, he's also connected to Christianity?
No.
So
so the question then becomes, why is he being so difficult? Menachem Liebtag says, there's one more story in Bereishis, Noach, that have the word Heichel, or a variation of that. Noach goes out into the fields after he plants a vineyard, and what happens? I think it's Vayachel Noach. Vayachel, thank you. Rashi says there, what happens? What did Noach do? I believe his word is, Rashi is something along the lines is, Asa Atzmo Chulin. He made himself Chulin. Why? He planted it. Why does it have to be that? I'm sure at this point in time you could bet that the Ibn Ezra did not have that reading of the Pasuk. So Rabbi Liebtag says, why are they like at such odds with each other? So he says, it's like Mordechai said at the beginning, these Psukim are all vague. I could look at Shait and say, you know what? Dor Enosh, Yesh V'Yesh, some good, some bad. Maybe they were good. I could look at the story of Nimrod. I could look at the story of Migdal Bavel. I could even look at the story of Noach and say they're good. But I could also do the opposite. So his suggestion is the following. Rabbi Liebtag says both words can be. Chal can mean chitchil, to begin, a positive, or chalal, chileal, profane. Which one is it? So he says, Eila toldos. Right? These are the toldos b'nei Noach. It's a beginning. There are a lot of beginnings in Sefer Bereishis. And a lot of beginnings in the first two parshios of Bereishis. And each of those beginnings present a possibility of going this way or that way. There's great potential of hitchil, and at the same time, there's great danger of chilel. It's not clear. There's always great hopes, but also terrible possibilities. So how does this help us understand Nimrod? How does that manifest itself in the debate between the Ibn Ezra and Rashi? It's a good redak. I don't know, take it home and read it. It happens to be a wonderful one. And then Jeremy will have less shamos in his shtender. But basically, the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban say that Nimrod was a mechadesh. He was heichel. He started something. He started to be a unifier of the world. But that's really scary. You see, because Kasudo has a beautiful explanation where he says, if you look at what happened right before Nimrod, the world was a beautiful place. It was being repopulated. There's a fabulous kaleidoscope of brothers and united people, and everybody's getting along. And man seems to be moving in the right direction, and everything is so great, yet, what happens? Comes along Nimrod, and he introduces this idea of, we're all one, but we're really all one. And we're going to be super together. Why? Because I'm going to be the leader of everyone. They didn't have leaders beforehand. Now the Radak says, doesn't mean they didn't have leaders, but they had like district judges and people that like did stuff. They didn't need a Gibor Ba'aretz. He comes along and does that. Is it bad? He's a Heichel. Which one is he? And this is where I would go on a limb, because I don't think this is what Rabbi Alex Israel says. I think he says something a little bit differently. I would end off by saying, maybe Nimrod actually started off like the Ibn Ezra. When he started, he had a vision, a beautiful vision, a vision of everybody's dedicated to God. What did he do? He presented everybody, I'm a Gibor Tzayin, I can show you how to conquer animals. Lifnei Hashem, we're going to bring it as korbanos. It's going to be amazing. And yet, I believe that in time, the sense of power and the absolute sense of power that he had corrupted him. And then he became a gibor. But he was no longer a gibor al Hashem. He was a gibor tzayin. Take a look at the very last source. Ezehu gibor hakoveshet yitzro. Who is a strong person? It's the person that conquers his yetzer. He conquers himself. The sad thing is that rather than Nimrod being one that conquered himself, he's one that hunts others. So he goes from being what could have been a true gibor to a gibor tzayid. I believe the lack of clarity between them perhaps could be understood as whether you want to say he started off that way and he ended the other way, or you could just say he was two sides of the same coin. It was the vast potential to go one way and the reality of what he became. So, so sad. And that, I think, is the great tragedy. While Nimrod might be the great tragedy of the individual, Bavel is the great tragedy of the civilization. It was a civilization that had such vast potential. They were building real towers. They could have been a towering generation. And yet in the end, rather than building all those things to greatness, they end up in a state of utter despair. Bereshis once again leaves us with a story of great potential, a great start, and yet a very sad end. God willing, next week, we'll take a look at the beginner of all the good stuff, and perhaps I might shock you by who that beginner really is.